At BP, we've reset our strategy with a focused downstream, a growing upstream, and disciplined investment in the transition. See how we'll grow shareholder value at bp.com/reset.
MQCB 5107000, X-Range Preferences Radio, no offer, take advantage, all regions 30.
Some people like A and others like B. At BMW, we prefer X. Like the dynamic X3, meant for ultimate exploration. The X5, built to conquer even the most difficult paths, or the pinnacle of comfort and luxury, the X7. And since every X-Range vehicle is packed with performance and versatility, you'll always get the best of X. The BMW X-Range. Your next X-Venture starts here. Take advantage of exceptional lease and finance offers today.
My first guest on today is a man who spent most of his time on the other side of the camera, to be honest with you. It's quite funny to see him sitting across the desk from me. He is, of course, Dave Tweed, David from Bloomberg, and now happily enjoying the sunshine here in this there Malaga. How are you, dear boy?
In Torremolinos.
In Torremolinos. Hang on, I've put the wrong way. You see, I'm such a professional. Try again.
I was just saying it's Torremolinos, yeah. Tokyo, Hong Kong, Torremolinos.
How are you finding that transition? And how did that cross your radar?
I was actually a little bit worried about it when I first moved here, which was now, 5 years ago. But since I've been here, I've only been away from Torremolinos, more or less, Malaga, twice. I went to Belgium once for a wedding, and last month I went to Mexico. And that's it. And I'm really very happy to stay put because I absolutely love being here.
Do you find that it's one of those places that you move over here and people come over to you?
Yes. Yeah, Lots of people are coming. Yes, I've got visitors coming all summer, actually, this summer. I just had my godson from Melbourne in Australia messaged me this morning. He says he wants to come for 4 days in July. So
brilliant.
I'm happy about
that. Is that from you originally from
yeah.
there? But yeah. So do you find the lifestyle here, the open air bit and the climate is a little bit like Oz?
Well, remember, Australia's a continent. We've got a lot of different weather there. Melbourne gets cold. It doesn't really get cold in Torremolinos. It's a little bit, but it's Melbourne gets blisteringly hot. And we're in a little microclimate here, and the weather here is incredible.
Yeah, perfect for gardening.
Perfect for gardening.
See what I did.
Which
there.
Brings me to.
So you've swapped the high, sort of the high pressure and what was it like being in front of the television? Because we were chatting, weren't we, last weekend, and you said it was, I always get that thing, people come up to me and say, you don't look like you sound, which obviously they imagine because I sound like this. I'm 6 foot tall with like sort of Conan the Barbarian with a bit of Brad Pitt flowing, and then they meet me looking like an evil bald egg meets Bob Hoskins, and they're ever so disappointed. Did you ever get that?
I think you're underestimating yourself.
Yes. But did you find
I don't know what people think I sound like, what I look like. And anyway, they knew what I looked like because I was on TV all the time.
But you were always very dapper and with, you know.
Oh, well, I mean, look, I've just come from the garden. I've actually just come from my volunteer garden group at the English Cemetery in Malaga.
Yes, right.
That's my thing.
That's your thing.
I went to that English cemetery 5 years ago when I was looking for an apartment, and I was really disappointed with how the gardens were.
So were you a gardener? Was it the sort of thing you see to de-stress from high?
No, because I've always lived in apartments in the middle of cities, but I've always had something going on the balcony or whatever. And I have I've got a library of gardening books, which is rather large. And then when I came here with my husband, Stefan, we built a house in Montemar outside Torremolinos. Mm-hmm. And there I designed and grew our first garden, my first garden. And I'm quite pleased with it.
Did you come over at all Capability Brown? Did you sort of?
It's like, not quite a Capability Brown, no, but I do use a lot of the Japanese borrowed gardens because I've borrowed a lot of the gardens around. You know, Montemart's one of the greenest parts on the Costa del Sol.
I know nothing about it. So you're going to have to absolutely educate me on this because I know nothing about it.
So a borrowed garden is simply where you've got trees from other people's gardens. We're on the side of a hill. So you use trees from other sea people's gardens and all of it becomes part of your own garden because people don't know where your garden ends and their gardens begin. So you just incorporate it in the design.
You're making a sort of like fascistic incursion around, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just going to take this bit of your garden.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. So The house came first and the garden afterwards? Were you kind of...
The house came first and the garden afterwards.
You did the hard bits.
And for this particular garden around the house, because the house is a rectangle, modern thing, designed inspired by Mies van der Rohe. And so I decided then I wanted to put the house in a sort of a green box, which was also as strict as the lines of a Mies van der Rohe house. Yeah. But within all of that, you've got what the Moors used to do in their gardens, like up at the Generalife at the Alhambra, where you've got lots of strict hedges made of myrtle. And in the middle of that, you just let the plants go crazy and do whatever they want.
God is in the detail, isn't it?
And surprisingly, I didn't realize it because, of course, we had to turn the water off this year. My garden hasn't had any water for the last 3 or 4 months. And I hadn't realized it, but I planted myself a pretty drought-tolerant garden. Which is what we want to do at the English Cemetery, in the gardens of the English Cemetery.
What? So explain to me, because I've, you know, Malaga has come on like you wouldn't believe. I mean, when I arrived here in 85, you landed at the airport and you turned right. You didn't go into Malaga. I mean, you didn't go to Malaga at all.
And fastest growing city in Spain.
Yeah.
And we're at the English Cemetery. I'm pulling the conversation back to the English Cemetery because that's what I'm here to talk about.
Bell, isn't it?
And in the middle of Malaga, 400 metres from the Bullring. Have you been to the English Cemetery?
No, I haven't. That's why I'm going to be there night we're going to talk about in a minute.
400 metres from the Bullring, right? Yeah. And that's got to be in central Malaga, lies an 8,000 square metre plot, which is the English Cemetery. It's been there for 200 years. And it's a piece of Malaganian history. It's fantastic.
Because it is the Church of England, presumably the English couldn't get buried or...
Well, the Church of England said, but they've only been there since 1896.
Right.
So we've been there since 1831. Malaga was the first city, or one of the first cities in Spain to industrialize. And so the English here came here to make some moolah.
Yeah.
And at the time, they were Protestant. Protestants were banned from being buried in Catholic cemeteries.
They used to bury them on the beach?
So what they had to do, in Malaga, the authorities decreed that they had to be buried on the beach at night in secret, standing up, facing the Mediterranean, the idea being that on the day of reckoning, those souls would walk out to sea and not come back and pollute the sacred Catholic land of Spain.
That must have upset the Moors. as for the Visigoths, they must have been,
they were thrown out in 1492.
Exactly. Get on that boat. It's absolutely safe. Don't worry about it. It's watertight.
It wasn't very good for the English, can you imagine? Because there were loads of pandemics used to come through here all the time. I mean, if you look at the ancient, the old cemetery at the English Cemetery, it's full of these beautiful graves of children who've died from, you know, pandemics. Well, then, you know, a family would have to take their child down to the seaside, buried at low tide in a hole, without a coffin.
Yeah.
And, you know, they become prey to dogs and rats and langostinus. So that's why I always say, if you're going to go down to one of those chiringuitos at the Malagueta, think twice before you order the paella. Although now it's not.
He's going to say they haven't buried anybody at sea for Lua. They're probably burying them at sea in Marbella more likely, but that's a different story altogether. So it's been there for a while. I had some dim and dusty memory of it being there, but it was all sort of one of those sort of curiosities. However, over the past few years, they started to realise that actually, as Malaga has revamped itself, that the English Cemetery needed revamping.
In the Junta de Andalucía named it one of their bien interés cultural, what is that, a cultural asset, in about 2012, I think it was, well before my time, but anyway, about 2012. So we are a cultural asset, and the reason is because even though, I mean, we've got some relatively famous people buried at the cemetery, but what's even more interesting are the stories of the people who contributed to Malaga's growth and contributed to the fact that Malaga has been one of the most cosmopolitan cities in Spain, if not the most cosmopolitan city in Spain, and still is.
The thought just struck me, you know, being a reporter and, you know, being a journalist myself of some whatever, When you, we always have this quest, don't we, for information, and our heads start worrying about what were these people like, what were they doing, what were their loves, what were their passions, what. Going to a cemetery for people, to a cemetery for people like us, is like an overload, because you suddenly start thinking, what were the family, and when you start seeing those, you know, those little graves and the pandemics, this is why I love.
Well,
history,
I mean, it was when I first visited it, when I was looking for somewhere to live in Malaga. I went in there, and to be honest, there wasn't a lot of information about anybody in there, and I was a bit disappointed. So the first thing I did when I joined the foundation as a trustee was, you know, how are we going to encourage more people to come? So I wrote an audio guide. And in order to write the audio guide, I had to do quite a lot of research and read all these incredible articles that Liz Parry had written about the cemetery, and then, you know, bring them to life in terms of an audio. So the disappointing thing is that a lot of people who do come to the cemetery are somewhat reluctant to download these modern apps onto their mobile phones. So we're going to transfer the audio guide onto something else, another way of listening to it. But when you do listen to an audio guide of a cemetery,
Otherwise, you just
it brings a cemetery to life, exactly. So to speak.
Exactly, like you're saying, famous people, what, dead famous, Tish Boom here a week. But yeah, because otherwise they're just aimlessly wandering, aren't they?
Yeah. There's a story of the Gneisenau, which was a German naval vessel that foundered outside Malaga.
The Gneisenau?
Yes, have you heard of it?
No. Tell me more.
Well, it was a German naval vessel in 1900. Can you imagine what the captain of a German naval vessel was like in 1900 when the Kaiser was
huge
trying to...
Nice you could hang your car keys off.
So, yes. So anyway, this ship was moored outside Malaga Harbour, and the breakwater. And the authorities said, there's a storm coming up. It'll be here tomorrow. We would certainly like to invite you to bring your ship into the safety of our harbour. And the Captain Kretschmann apparently said, we don't need to go inside the harbour. We've been all around the world. Some squall, Mediterranean squall, not a problem for us. So 10:30 the next... Sorry about that, my German.
Indeed.
10:30 the next day, he's realised he's made a bit of a mistake. So he orders a head of steam up, because it was a hybrid. It was under sail and under steam. He orders a head of steam. He needs 50 revolutions a minute of the turbine in order to get to safety.
Right.
He calls up and they say, yeah, we've got 50 revolutions a minute. So he pulls up the anchor and starts drifting, because he's made a mistake. He's misheard. It's 15 revolutions a minute that they had. They didn't have enough. So they started drifting, and they eventually drifted straight into the breakwater of Malaga's
in plain sight of everybody
marina,
seeing this.
And I think there are about 400 souls on board, and 42 died, including a 15-year-old boy, because it was a naval training ship, and the first officer and the captain, they all died as well. But the extraordinary thing was that the people of Malaga, this happened at 11 o'clock in the morning. Everyone could see it in December 1900. Great big chains of people went into the water to rescue people. So a lot of them were rescued.
Yeah.
And they ended up in the Hospital Nobel, which is on the other side of the Bullring and built by someone else who's buried in the English cemetery. It's got those sorts of stories.
I've never
one of the reasons why you've got the Puente Alemán.
Yeah, okay.
That was because 7 years later, when a great big flood came down through the what's that river called?
The one that goes
through Malaga. It washed away a bridge, and the Kaiser heard about it and raised this money in thanks for what the people of Malaga did about.
I thought that was much later.
1907 was the first one, but they've been rebuilding it ever since.
I just imagined that the German connection was perhaps a little more sort of 30s sort of thing, right?
No. There was a good German connection.
I'd never heard that story before.
There you go. You see?
There you go. Well, there are plenty of those at the English cemetery.
So, what have you been? So, I mean, when you restore a cemetery, so what's that? I mean, it's a bit more than just sort of a bit of weeding, isn't it, I suppose?
Look, for me, when I first went around the cemetery...
Guadal Medina. Guadal
Medina. That's it. The gardens were famous in the 19th century. Hans Christian Andersen came and wrote that he thought that they were the best thing about Malaga. But unfortunately, the gardens have sort of deteriorated. I mean, some parts of the cemetery were on five levels, and some of these levels are eroding. I mean, they're like deserts. They're just patches, and they're eroding, and the rocks are falling, and they're damaging some of the graves. And those, basically, the cemetery needs to be planted in order to stop the erosion.
Okay.
But the opportunity for us is that we've got this 8,000 square meters that needs to be completely recuperated as a garden. We've got the opportunity to, and I'm going to use all these words, right?
Go.
Sustainable.
Right.
Right. Drought tolerant and innovative. And the innovative is the most important part of this, because if you want to plant a drought tolerant garden, you're going to be using plants which are growing on the hills outside Marbella and Malaga and all up and down this, the Costa. Those plants aren't available to buy in nurseries, because nurseries have always been focused on plants which have needed, you know, quite a bit of water, because that's the sort of gardens we have up and down here. But life is changing. Climate change is changing the way that we're going to have to think about gardening. And we want the English Cemetery Gardens to become a model for gardeners up and down the Costa del Sol. And at the same time as they become a model, we start to have... Is that my dog barking?
Yeah, no.
We start to have a new income stream coming in, which can support the restoration of the graves in the cemetery. So the whole thing becomes circular.
See, the thing is, if you say drought-resistant garden or not, because, I mean, obviously this area, the Moors come in, they do the wonderful irrigation. That's why agriculture is based here, basically.
Yes.
But people will think, oh, if it's going to be drought-resistant, it's going to be cactus, it's going to be boring, it's going to be whatever.
Yes. Which is why we want to be the model, because there are some incredible drought-resistant gardens, drought-tolerant gardens. Basically, you take these plants that people... Lavender. I mean, lavender is native to here. Rosemary, these are native to here. If you take these plants and many other plants that are around here as well, and you can actually plant them in a scheme which is sort of English. It can look English, but they're just different plants. And it's a matter of, that's where the innovation comes in. What can you plant with plants? I'm talking to some designers here, Mari and Simon, who used to be in the United Kingdom. 20 years they were focusing on this sort of stuff. Now they're doing drought-tolerant gardens here.
Right.
And they are extraordinarily talented. And I hope that they're going to be able to collaborate with us in the English Cemetery when we start to actually plant out the garden and turn it into something, you know, emblematic for Andalusia.
Because this is one of the things, isn't it? I suppose because garden centres, we would ask, their businesses like everything else, there are certain things they push and certain things that require more water. And so therefore what might look, it's like everybody wanting to have, I don't know, avocados year round or whatever, isn't it? We hadn't really thought
it wasn't a problem, but I think that anybody who's got a garden now is realising it's becoming a problem, because either they're illegally watering or their plants are dying off.
Yeah.
Mm, indeed. So what do you, you've joined the foundation, you're getting, obviously, you're reimagining how you're going to...
Well, so I've joined the foundation and I've been given two responsibilities. One is fundraising, because in order to... Look, the idea is that we're going to be self-funded, but we need to make a capital investment in order to create the garden that we want to make. So we need to raise funds in order to do that. And the other responsibility I've got is I've been put in charge of grave sales, which is a bit weird, because I never thought that I'd be involved in selling graves in a cemetery.
When you say selling, I mean
selling graves. We're an operating cemetery, and that's the thing that people don't understand.
It's a living, breathing cemetery.
We are a living, breathing cemetery. And that many people don't know that. So, you know, many people come into the cemetery and they say, oh, can we still be buried here? Mm. Well, you can't be buried as a body. We can't do that. We can't bury bodies because of phytosanitary reasons, because we're within the confines of Malaga.
Sure.
But we bury ashes. At the moment, the niches in the walls are all full, so we need to develop some more walls for those. But we've got plenty of places in the ground. And as we plant out the cemetery, the grounds have become much more attractive, which is why you've got to hear my, this is my advertising.
Come on then, there you go. Brace yourselves.
Reserve yourself a place in history. Choose the gardens of the English Cemetery of Malaga.
I like that.
I think that's lovely.
That's very good. That's very good indeed. You know.
And come and take a guided tour as well.
With the audio, with the audio book and the whole thing. I'm sorry, it's just the hound is with us today, isn't it? Nikki is underneath the desk. Nikki is, by the way, a rather like, what time is she?
She's a Vizsla.
A Vizsla.
She's like a Weimaraner, which is grey, except that she's tan.
Right, well, she's very tan. She's I think she's eating whatever's been, I think, because Dave has left his breakfast and that's gone anyway. But if you're wondering where your dog's gone, it's sitting by my right leg.
Right, okay, there she is. Okay.
So, fundraising.
Oh, yes, fundraising.
Now, you gave me a phone call the other week, and I thought,
That's right. That's right.
You're doing, you know...
As I mentioned before, in order... our target is... Our objective is to become self-funding, okay? So we want to develop income streams. And one of the income streams will come when people are visiting the cemetery. They'll have to pay a bit to come in and see what we're doing in terms of...
Fair enough.
If it's going to be like a botanical garden.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll be able to convert the front. There's a gatehouse, and I'd like to convert that into a bookstore, focusing on gardening books and books about tolerance.
Are there actually buildings? I mean, presumably there's an administration office.
There's a small office that was built in 1856, and we need to raise money to actually renovate that. And there's the Anglican church in the middle, and that's actually in a building that looks like a Doric temple. Or a Greek temple with Doric columns. That was built in the 1850s, and that's where the gardeners used to be.
Right.
But now it's a church.
Is that Louis? Anyway, is that Father Louis? Is Father Louis?
Father Louis. That's where Father Louis
works out of. That's his place, is it?
Exactly. So my responsibility is to raise funds and in order to invest in the cemetery. That's why we're putting on this dinner. We're putting on a gala dinner on June the 6th.
A gala in the garden?
A gala in the garden. It's going to be in the grounds of the cemetery. And it's going to be a cross between, say, Glyndebourne, the opera festival, and, well, I like to say, the last night of the proms. because we've got actors, but we've got opera singers who are going to be singing things like English-related music. So...
Gilbert and Sullivan,
but also anything like, for example, Lakmé's flower duet, which obviously is French, but it is the British Airways ad.
Uh-huh.
It's the British Airways theme.
Yes, of course.
Music.
We're not going to hum it now.
And it's also heartbreakingly beautiful, and I can't wait to see the rendition of it live by the opera singers who are coming to sing.
And there's something about an event in the Mediterranean on a summer evening.
Oh, it's going to be, yes, al fresco is the word.
Yeah, exactly.
So it'll be outside. It's a formal event.
Right.
So, but not black tie, because no one's got black tie.
Yeah,
I've got black tie. Suit and tie. And as you said, Giles, thank you very much. Because Giles has offered, I can tell you, listeners, that Giles has offered to be the master of ceremonies for this event.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then we're going to follow it with an auction.
Okay. I go for a very low starting price at this point, obviously.
I mean, I know that when people see the information's on the website, by the way, if you want to know anything about the gala dinner.
Yeah.
It is sort of expensive. Well, I realize that. But we have to bring in all the tables, all the chairs, all the knives, the forks, everything. We don't have any kitchens. So,
strange that in a cemetery. You think they have
if we were holding it in a hotel, it would be, But it's going to be magic, because I have to say the atmosphere in the cemetery at night is absolutely gorgeous.
Presumably you're looking for corporates as well for this. I mean, in terms of long-term sponsorship for the cemetery, that would be the ideal.
Well, I've got the sponsors of this event.
Yeah.
If we could get some portrait, if I can get corporate sponsors who can actually sponsor what we're doing in the gardens, that would be absolutely fantastic. And then we've also got to You know, we're at the beginning of this process.
Sure.
So we also have to make applications to the European Union Regional Development Funds, and then we need to make applications also, once again, to the Junta de Land y Lucía and the Ayuntamiento of Malaga. Yeah. But because we're a private foundation, we don't come under the framework of the Ayuntamiento's parks and gardens. So, you know, we might be able to get some sort of exception to that because we are, in fact, a park and garden, which is pretty open. But you know, poco a poco, we're doing it. We're moving towards, our objective.
When you speak to, like, people like they mentioned in the Malaga, you know, Frente Cotteratore, did people of Malaga actually know it's there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, the mayor of Malaga is a good friend of the cemetery.
Yeah.
Although most of the speaking to these people is done by my colleagues. Porque aprendiendo español.
What's the date? What date is this?
June the 6th.
It's a Thursday night. It's a school night.
School night, yeah. Well, but the other thing is that we're aiming for an audience that probably doesn't know even that the cemetery exists. So we're aiming for a new audience. Yeah. And an audience who might get turned on by our vision, who might be able to help us financially in the future.
Yeah.
Philanthropy.
Well, listen, I think it's a great idea. And I think a lot of people want to get involved in Malaga, but don't know. I mean, I had no idea that story of the German.
There are plenty of other stories. Exactly. There are some great stories.
Hans Christian Andersen, the whole thing. Yeah.
Are you winding me up?
No, I'm not. I'm not winding you up at all.
Oh, you keep
I'm
on pointing at me.
No, I'm not.
There you are.
This is how I present.
What have you got over there?
Like an octopus. Just you concentrate on talking to point.
Okay.
Go on. Yeah.
Lost my thread.
So there you are saying it's a great thing to get involved in.
Well, as I was saying, I've just come from we've got a volunteer gardening group that meets every Friday. The more the merrier there.
So, yeah,
but the other thing that we would really love is anyone who, you know, like I volunteered at Cudeca when I first came here and I used to turn up to the furniture store in Torremolinos every Saturday morning.
Yeah.
But the people who would like to, you know, come to the cemetery on, say, oh, yeah, I can be out there on Tuesday from 9 till 2. And if anyone wants a guided tour, I'll take them on a guided tour. And we can teach these people to tell the stories about the cemetery and take people around. I do it all the time. And I'm yet to get bored. With telling this, because people are just so marvelous and appreciative. I was showing someone the other day a particular grave, which for me is very important because it shows that the English cemetery is a place of tolerance. It's a grave that is in a terrible state, but it's written in Hebrew and in Spanish.
Ah, seraphitic.
So yes, yeah. And this man who wasn't Jewish offered to raise funds to restore this grave. It's going to cost about 650 euros, which isn't ridiculous. To restore a grave and put the
people would pay that for a bed at a well-known Marbella beach club.
So, is it that much?
Yeah.
Oh,
Wigwam.
Right. I don't go there.
No, neither do I. I got banned.
Did you get over the back wall?
No, that's something I wrote.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, we'll talk about that later.
Exactly.
But if anybody is interested in becoming a guide at the cemetery, we would be overjoyed to welcome them.
Do you do?
Or to join the gardening club on Friday mornings.
Okay. And again, it's this is English Cemetery, just key in English Cemetery Malaga.
English Cemetery Malaga, it'll take you straight to our website.
Do you do any sort of community, i.e. the schools or thing
about this? Yes. We've got schools coming. But I would say it's pretty much twice a day, Tuesday to Friday. We're closed on Mondays. Mm. So Tuesday to Friday, we have schools coming from all around, as far away as Sevilla.
Really?
And, mostly Spanish schools.
Yeah.
And we have 30 students at a time, so 60 students a day.
Yeah.
And we either do guided tours. Oh, and I take them up to the old cemetery and talk about the importance of vaccination, which is why we don't have cholera any longer. I'm always a bit worried that I'll have an anti-vaxxer school teacher who's going to say, "How dare you preach that?"
Yeah.
And at the same time, we have gymkhanas. Now, this is a word that apparently
visions
it's part of the
people riding small horses
it's
around
it's
the
It's part
cemetery.
Of the Spanish lexicon
is it?
That I had nothing to do with. The only time I've ever come across the word gymkhana was when I was reading a cartoon from some country house thing in 1908 where someone says, oh, and then we had a gymkhana and it was frightfully good fun, which is like they all run around in the country houses doing all sorts of activities. Well, that's what we do at the cemetery.
Okay.
They come and we give them a booklet and we say, okay, you've got to go off and find out what do all these graves have in common or where do those ones come from. So they go around the cemetery and they learn about the cemetery and they realize that you know, that we're not really just a cemetery, we're a cultural institution, we're an historic memorial park.
There you go. So 6th of June, Thursday, gala dinner, worth every penny.
It will be.
And also
with you emceeing.
Well, you and yes, obviously, and you doing the guided tour. Gymkhana's optional. Brilliant. Well, listen, thanks for coming in to join me today. We said we'd do a couple of minutes. I think we've done about only 35.
Wow.
I know, doesn't sound... And congratulations, Nikki has been a very good girl.
She's been lovely.
She's been lovely wherever she... Can't see her at the moment.
She's down next to me. Right, she's looking lovely. At me.
So, again, if people want to get involved, if people want to get some tips...
Go to the website.
Yeah.
You can send an email to our information at the Information Cemeterio Inglés Malaga. It's on the website, on the contact thing. Get in touch with us if you want to volunteer. And there's a big banner with a lovely green poster across it on the front of the website. Click on that at the bottom. You can buy your tickets to the dinner.
Going to be getting events. People will be dying to get in there, etc.
Stop it!
David Tweed, as always, thank you so much for your time today.
TRE.radio.